the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, Candace Waters is going to be here to answer a question from a girl who wants to know how she can get over her fiancé's skinny, short frame. So she is at least honest, and Candace will be honest as well in weighing in on that. So do stay tuned. And then for our culture segment, we're very excited to have Roland Warren, who is the president of CareNet. He's going to tell his own story of walking through what he described as an unplanned pregnancy, but not a crisis pregnancy, and also infuse hope for what it means to approach life issues as God's design for the family unit. It's about more than a baby, and it's about more than a baby and a woman. So he's going to have some great insight there. And in that vein, I'm very excited to have a roundtable here with two friends that I kind of just met. I have Diane Foley here, as well as Rob Denler. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent to have you here. Both Diane and Rob are from Life Network, which, Diane, why don't you hop in and give us a little explanation of what Life Network is?
Okay. Life Network is an organization in Colorado Springs, Colorado, been around for over 30 years, and the primary purpose is to really uphold the value of life from all aspects of that life. And so there are a number of different outreaches or approaches that we take to look at why is life so valuable? One of them is we are involved with teaching about sexual integrity in the public schools here in Colorado Springs. So that involves looking at the idea that the healthiest choice for young adults is to avoid all high-risk activity, and one of those is sexual activity. And the reasons for that go way beyond physical consequences, but we look at social and emotional and ethical consequences that occur as a result of that choice. But also not so much about what not to do, but how to have healthy marriages in the future and how to have the best relationships and really how to have the best sex if you look at the research. So a big part of it is educating young adults, particularly in the high school years. We also have a pregnancy center, and that pregnancy center is here to talk with young men and women who are facing most of the time an unplanned pregnancy, and to talk through some of the options that they have and what to do about that pregnancy, to be there for them and to listen to them. And really, our focus is to help them see that regardless of the fact they feel like that they don't have any alternatives or options other than abortion, that truly there are options for them. And we do that a number of different ways. One of the ways is that we provide ultrasounds for them so that they can actually see the baby, and that does help in many situations. We also have a program called Life Steps, which is the support system to help surround them. Many times they feel like they don't have anybody there to support them, either financially or also really emotionally, with the questions and concerns that they have. So from the time they are pregnant until the children are two, they meet with a mentor twice a month and really learn how to be parents. This is for both young women and young men. And Rob will talk a lot more about the men's aspect of this. The other thing that we have then is a program that really helps people address the issues involving choices they've made in the past that involved an abortion. So it can, it's a support group as well as really intensive Bible study that helps them find forgiveness and restoration from a choice that they have made that really has affected their life.
Cool. Well, and I think it's cool because both of you have pretty different backgrounds. I think, Diane, you're a medical doctor. And Rob, you have a background in marketing and youth ministry. And
That's so
kind of really, obviously, the relational components involved in both of those. I want to talk, let's just walk, because one of the things I wanted to do with this segment is to walk through the doors of a pregnancy center. And of course, most of you out there know that Focus on the Family has been involved with life issues forever and ever, and we now have option ultrasound, and so we're very passionate about placing equipment in centers that will allow women to have more information related to that choice. And not only that, but to also encourage folks in various stages in that and encourage these centers themselves. And I know there's all kinds of semantics around this, and we've had numerous, like, emails and bulletins here at Focus about how we call them pregnancy medical clinics, and you know. But I want to know, so this is going to help us clarify this a little bit. If a woman were to walk through, she has a choice of walking through the doors at Planned Parenthood or walking through the doors at Life Network. What about those experiences would be similar? What could she receive at either place? And then what sets Life Network apart? What's the difference?
Well, I think that many times they come for the same reason, trying to confirm whether or not they are pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that Life Network offers is that our pregnancy tests are free. Hmm. And so that is a difference between typically what happens at most Planned Parenthood clinics.
Okay.
The services are not free most of the time. Some of them may be, but the majority of them are not.
Okay.
So that's the first thing, and that really is a way that we try to draw people in.
Hmm.
To let them know these services are free. And then you meet with a trained client advocate that has been trained to sit down and talk through the situation that you are in. Again, I think that just as you cannot say all pregnancy centers are the same, you can't say that all Planned Parenthood offices are the same as well.
Okay.
And so I think that's very important for us to understand that there are many Planned Parenthood clinics that very much believe that they are there to offer a service that nobody else offers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because in our society today, abortion is legal, that equates in most young adults' mind as okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that's important to understand is that how prevalent the lie of the enemy is that says abortion is the only thing that you can do that gets rid of the problem and you never have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a huge fear of young adults. Of course, we're talking largely to a single young adult population on this show. But one of the biggest concerns that I've heard from young adults is this is going to derail my whole life. There's no way I can continue with my plans, whether that's education, that's career, that's a future marriage, that's all kinds of things. You know, and the fears of predicting the future and what will this be? There's no way that I can have hope in that. Do you hear that a lot in centers?
Oh, all the time. Mm-hmm. I think fear is the biggest thing that we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's another difference that we're speaking about between us and Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
We're there to be with them in their place, but then to be able to say, not only are we here for you now, but we're ready to support you moving forward. How can we help you with this? I think another element that's different that I think really speaks into that fear is the fact, you mentioned Roland Warren, he really is lifting up the idea of family, that we are there for both men and women, that we can say to this guy, you know, we're here for you just as much as we're here for this woman.
Sure.
And the guys are experiencing the same fears, that their lives are going to be sidetracked, they're going to be derailed, and they don't know where to turn.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, they're told that this isn't part of their decision even, that they're just supposed to support.
To that point, Rob, can you explain what, you know, because we have tons of guys listening, can you explain what both the role and the rights of men in this situation are? Because I think a lot of guys just think they have no role or rights, that they're just going to have to be hands off and they're going to hope for the best.
Unfortunately, talking about the lies of the enemy, men have come to believe that when it comes to pregnancy, they do not have a voice, that they've been convinced that this is strictly a female thing. And oftentimes they come in the door and they will say, you know, I'm here and I'm just going to support whatever she chooses. I actually have a client I see now. He came in and he told me after talking with him, he said, Rob, you need to understand I'm pro-choice across the board. Whatever she chooses, I'm going to support. And I said, well, yeah, but what do you want? What are you thinking? Well, I want to be a dad, he said. I said, well, have you told her that? No. He told me no. So there's a great example of somebody that's just believing he has no voice in this.
Yeah.
The great thing about that is they are engaged in our Life Steps program. They have a year and a half old baby, beautiful baby girl now.
Wow.
Because he's willing to say, I'm going to be there for you. And this is the thing that this woman needs as well.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to know that someone's going to walk beside her and support her and help her through this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the guys don't believe they have this opportunity to have a voice in this decision for life.
So talk to us a little bit about what support is actually available. A woman that comes in and is literally like, how is this doable? I don't even know. I can't even take care of myself, let alone take care. And I'm talking about, you know, I'm not talking about teenager. I'm talking about 20-something women that are just trying to figure out their lives. How would you guys tell them that this is doable? How do you root for them? And then how do you practically actually show support moving ahead?
I think that one of the things that's important is to help them acknowledge that even though this, they feel like that they don't have the capability of doing this, there is something inside of them that recognizes that there is something right about being a mom. Mm-hmm. And so they struggle with that choice of what's wrong with me that I don't feel like I can do this or even want to do this. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to acknowledge that there are many situations where it actually would be better for that child to be raised in another home. That had a mom and a dad that loved and wanted that child and was able to take care of that child. And so one of the things we do as part of Life Steps, regardless of what choice the young woman or man has made, all of them are part of a learning session that where they learn about adoption and what that means and what that might look like. And it's interesting, but adoption really seems to be the worst option for most people in our culture right now. Because the thought is, I'm pregnant, I can't parent this child, it's going to ruin my life. So that is a bad option. Adoption, oh my goodness, if I adopt my child, they're going to grow up thinking they've been abandoned by their birth mother, and that's going to cause all kinds of problems. I can't choose that. So I'm left with abortion, and that seems to be the best option. And so part of the conversation is, you know, this may be an option for you. Beyond that, then, there is the emotional support that comes from learning what it means to be a parent and how you can parent, and having that almost the way it used to be years ago when your aunts lived down the road and your grandmother was across the street and your own mom was there and everybody helped you raise that child. The Life Steps client advocates and the coaches really come alongside and become that support for the people going through that to help them see. We help them get involved with all of the programs that are available financially within our county for people that are going through this. So from a financial standpoint, there are a lot of resources out there. We help connect them with those. Mm-hmm. They go through the emotional kinds of support through our classes and that type of thing. And they develop relationships, not only with coaches, but also with other people going through Life Steps that are experiencing the same kind of thing that they experience. Mm-hmm.
Another element is it is an earn while you learn program too. Right. So a lot of the young couples coming into the Life Steps program are hurting financially and they need help resource wise. So by attending these appointments, these classes in Life Steps, they're allowed to earn baby bucks that they can purchase things like a crib or a car seat, clothes, variety of different things that can help out resource wise. Mm-hmm. Speaking to your point on connecting, Diane, relationship is key. We even have groups, Bible studies for young women and men, as well as different group activities that they can connect to peers going through the same stage in life. And that really seems to help a lot.
Yeah, that's super cool. Let's just speak briefly here to the, you know, and of course we have in our culture coming up, Roland Warren, I'll be talking to him. But I mentioned how he is so passionate about the family unit. When is it, do your counselors get involved in helping a couple discern, like if they're still together as a couple, if they're a dating couple or whatever, whether or not, okay, you guys can make a go of this as a family, or what if you have a woman who comes in who her boyfriend bailed on her when she found out she was pregnant? To what extent do you try to, and in what ways, do you move this ahead as a, it's actually, you know, starting a family isn't all that bad, or, you know, no, he or she is a loser and you need to look towards the adoption or something. I mean, that seems like a lot of discernment needed in there.
It is. Mm-hmm. And we obviously we have all sorts of relationship situations coming through the door. The key that we always try to work through is as a team, we try to figure out how we can help this couple the mm-hmm. best. And certainly sometimes that the best option is co-parenting. Mm-hmm. They may not be a couple, but they can co-parent, and we can give the resources to each side of that relationship. Hmm. as we build relationship with these clients, for instance, on the male side of things, we can start speaking more and more into their lives. Mm-hmm. A lot of our clients are engaged, quote unquote engaged. And we can say, okay, you've chosen to be involved in her life. You've chosen to father this child. The next step is, what are you going to do? Are you going to just be cohabitating, or are you going to go to this next step? And we really strongly encourage at that point, obviously, if they're committed to each other, mm-hmm. this next step of marriage. Hmm. But it really is kind of a case-by-case basis. And part of that's through relationship. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is we can go up to 2 years of age of the child in life steps. So that gives us the opportunity to build that relationship. And as that builds, speak more and more truth into their lives.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the, 2 years old, kind of mm-hmm. walking through a very extensive process up to that point. I'd like to turn a corner and talk a little bit about then, what is the role of the church in this? How do we get the local community of believers behind mothers and families? And because you guys, I mean, obviously, 2 years old, you can't walk with someone until they're 18, 20, 25. Mm-hmm. Would love it if you could, maybe someday. But obviously, the church and the role of believers, they need to step in at some point. So what does that look like, both in tandem for a mother who's just said, I'm pregnant, up until, growth of the child and beyond?
I think one of our goals is that we see ourselves as a organization that works alongside of the local church, mm-hmm. and we aren't a local church. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to help these couples, particularly those who have developed a relationship with Christ, because that's one of the big things that happens through Life Steps and through the Pregnancy Center, people recognize their need for God and become Christians, and now they really need to be discipled. And part of that happens with what we're doing, but we really aren't a discipling piece. So we are always looking for churches to come alongside of us and partner with us and pick up the pieces at that point to continue onward mm-hmm. in discipling and providing really resources and support for these families, young families that are coming along. One of the things that we have done is we actually have a Life Steps program that is housed in a local church. Hmm. And we are trying that as a model right now to say, it is so difficult for many of our clients to think about walking across into a church. But if their classes are already in a church, then walking into the sanctuary is a little bit an easier step for them. Sure. And so the idea would be that local churches would partner with us and host Life Steps program, our program, but within their church. It gives their congregation an opportunity to get involved, to volunteer, to mentor these young people, mm-hmm. and really an opportunity to reach and make a huge difference in the community to help build strong, healthy families.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, as we close here, let's talk resources a little bit. If a woman is out there listening right now, she's suspecting she may be pregnant, or she wants to counsel a friend or a sister or something like that, how do you even know what centers in your area are even legit? How do you go about finding one? What do you need to know? What questions do you need to ask? And then is there anything out there as far as like websites or things to read, or just how do we better understand what's going on right now, what we can do, how to access everything that's available?
I think that one of the best places to go right now, and you're going to have Roland Warren on a little bit later, but CareNet keeps a listing of affiliated pregnancy centers all over the country, and there are thousands of them all over the country that are available to people to go and to be involved with them. And so that's a good place to start. Their website, care-net.org, and you can go in, and there's a place where you click on it and ask them, find a center near you, and you type in your zip code, and they give you the listings of the centers that are around. That's one good way to do it.
Cool.
I think that they also have a lot of resources for on their website for reading and for just how to make that decision. I'm pregnant, what next? Those types of things are available for people to access as well. And then your local pregnancy centers would have the same kind of thing.
On the men's side, CareNet is really pushing towards family, and there's more and more resources available for men as well on mm-hmm. there. Another great place to look up is National Fatherhood Initiative, which is where Roland used to actually work before mm-hmm. CareNet, and there's a terrific materials for men, free resources, all kinds of things there. On top of just calling and checking with the CareNets and seeing if there's men's services available.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Diane and Rob, thanks so much for shedding some light on this, giving us updates, what's actually going on, and hopefully infusing some hope into the situation for those who are walking through this right now and or know someone who is. I also want to say here we've been talking about our culture segment that's coming up. If you are listening on the radio, hop over to boundless.org/radio and you'll be able to get the full show there that includes the culture segment, because you know we will be jumping ahead to our inbox here. But those of you that are on the podcast listening to that, obviously that's going to be coming up. So very excited to talk about this today. Thank you both of you for being part of this.
Thank you for having us.
You placed eternity in our heart. We were yours from the very start. All we've known has been torn apart, and now we have forever. You gave a song for our souls to sing. For more, we were made for more. At the end of the day, this will remain forever. We are yours, forever. We are yours. No, you can't take away what the world didn't give. We were made for more. We were made for more. At the end of the day, this will remain forever. We are yours, forever. We are yours.
Well, hey everyone, we are here for this week's culture segment, and I'm very excited to introduce to you, those of you who may not have heard of him, Roland Warren. Welcome to the Boundless Show.
Well, glad to be here.
Very good to have you. Mm-hmm. He is actually the president and CEO of CareNet, which I'm going to have him explain a little bit about. Mm-hmm. Because before he came there, he was actually the president of the National Fatherhood Initiative and has also had a pretty extensive run in the corporate world. And is apparently, based on his bio, pulled on to talk to all manner of media, because he's been everywhere from Oprah to the Wall Street Journal to USA Today. How come they call you so often?
I don't know. Awesome. I guess it's just they have such a low bar. You know?
No,
and I meet
that's
every
what I
time.
Thought they would say for talking to me. But so far, Oprah hasn't called. I'm going to have to call her, and it's going to become all.
It's messy when you do that. But
I know.
It's
but you know what? I have no shame. That's the problem.
There we go.
There's no shame there. So we're going to have a fun conversation, because those of you who know and love Boundless and Focus on the Family know that every January we celebrate Sanctity of Human Life Month and Week and Sunday. We're telling you all about what's going on. We love what we're doing here at Focus on the Family and our Option Ultrasound program. But anyway, Roland, I don't need you to talk about that, because we already know about what's going on at Focus. Okay.
Great.
We need to know what you're doing.
Okay.
So you started out, in fact, he just spoke minutes ago, mm-hmm. people, in our employee chapel, and started out by telling his own story, which mm-hmm. involved getting a girlfriend pregnant while at mm-hmm. Princeton, mm-hmm. which aren't you supposed to be studying when you're there? What's happening?
Yeah. I'm just, it's funny because, you know, Jim Daly asked me, he's like, well, isn't there a lot of work there and this and that? So, well, apparently not enough.
Which,
So, yeah, they still find time for things. So, we were Christians and we're facing an unplanned pregnancy, and
Were you both sophomores?
No, I was a junior, and she was a sophomore.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
And so we were both Christians and knew what we should have been doing and weren't doing part of it for sure. And we were faced with this unplanned pregnancy, and when she went to Student Health Services, the nurse that did the pregnancy test just pretty quickly said, you should have an abortion, and she didn't want to. Said, no, I want to have the baby. I want to get married. And the nurse was said, well, how are you going to graduate from Princeton with a baby? You know, mm-hmm. and then she asked her, well, what do you want to do when you graduate? And she said, well, I want to be a doctor. She said, well, are you going to be a doctor with a baby? Mm-hmm. You know, and she said, no, I want to get married. And the nurse said, well, that's fine. I mean, this is your choice. Mm-hmm. But if you you know, if you choose to have the abortion, the university will pay for it. But if you want to have the baby, you're on your own. So, you know, she came back and we talked about things and said, well, this is the plan. We're going to get married as we had planned. And, you know, as I talk about in terms of the life issue, you know, the role of, you know, a guy saying, you know, I'll be a husband to you and a father to the child growing inside of you. Is sort of, I call it the Joseph moment, so to speak, you know, kind of connecting the dots to the birth of Christ, which was unplanned from Mary and Joseph's perspective. They had hopes and dreams and aspirations that didn't include a baby, just like my wife, Yvette, and I, we ended up getting married as we planned. And they had hopes and dreams and aspirations just like we did, that didn't include a baby. And they said, let it be unto me as you have said, and they chose life. And so the pro-life story, so to speak, is not just about the baby. It's not just about the woman. It's not even just about the man. It's about all that together. And part of what I've been trying to help people understand is that we have to have a narrative that that's just not a pro-life narrative, but a pro-abundant life narrative. And when you do that, you've got to be thinking about what does abundant life look like to a baby. And we certainly see that in terms of the birth of Christ.
Yeah. And I liked what you said. You talked about, well, first of all, two things. One, when you were telling or retelling the New Testament account, you talked about how Joseph was very specifically given certain messages about his role. So it wasn't about, because a lot of times we hear both from pro-abortion folks and pro-life folks, like, you know, you got to care about the baby, and then you also got to care about the mother, and then the father's just kind of left out of the picture.
Right.
But how it was really in him stepping up and choosing to believe the angel and choosing to believe the message that he was given that gave him a role in this and, you know, allowed him to play his own part.
Well, you know, if you think about it, I mean, Joseph was challenged just like any abortion-minded man. He had the same a choice in front of him. And if you read the narrative, it says, you know, he was going to put her away quietly. Well, think about it. Well, you know, you couldn't put the baby away. So you had to put the woman and the baby away. And so he was challenged in the same as any abortion-minded man. And, you know, one of the things I tell people all the time when I tell this story, they say, well, you know, things are different. I mean, Joseph, he didn't sleep with her. So from a responsibility standpoint, it's really not the same thing. Does this analogy break down? But actually it doesn't. Because if you look through the scripture, it says, well, Joseph was a righteous man. And what a righteous man knows is what? That he's had sin. Self-righteous man thinks he doesn't have sin or thinks he's his own savior, right? But Joseph knew he was right. He was a righteous man, which meant that he had sin, and he was connected to the birth of Christ because the angel said, call him. He said, Joseph, son of David. So he was connecting Joseph to his community. Then he tells him who Jesus is. Don't be afraid to take Mary, not as your baby mama, but as your wife. And then he says, Jesus is going to save his people from their sins. Whose people? His people. So Jesus was going to save his people, including him, from their sins. And if you think about, well, why was Mary pregnant to begin with? Well, Mary was pregnant because we needed a savior. Why? Because people sinned. Who sinned? People, including Joseph. So actually, Joseph was just as responsible for Mary's pregnancy as any guy who sleeps with a woman who's not his, who's not his wife. So he actually stepped up to a responsibility in the same way that any guy should, because he was responsible because Joseph, as part of the human population, had sinned. And if just one person has sinned, Christ would have come. We know that in terms of Jesus, the whole narrative about leaving the 99 for the one, that even if it was just one person, Christ still would have came if it was just Joseph. So Joseph was just as responsible. So, you know, my view is that we have to have a narrative that frames the life issue consistent with the gospel and not frame it based on a narrative that's consistent with something else, and certainly not frame it based on a narrative that's being laid out by the other side. And the narrative that's laid out by the other side is that this is just a woman's issue. And maybe even we respond that, well, it's about the woman and the baby. My view is that's a paradigm that we have to reject. It's about the woman. It's about the baby. It's about the father. It's about the family. All is God designed.
Yeah. And you actually made the statement that abortion is an assault on the sanctity of marriage and family. It's
Absolutely.
Not. We often make it, you know, say, okay, the sanctity of human life and make it about killing a baby or whatever. But really what we're doing is disrupting God's plan for the family.
Absolutely.
In light of that. So how do we take that and look at this whole issue more more holistically in light of that? Because I like what you said. In fact, you might even want to share this, the difference, how you define differently an unplanned pregnancy and a crisis pregnancy.
Right,
you know, a lot of
right.
people will say, well, this is a crisis pregnancy.
Yeah.
But really, there's hope, very much hope, and a great story that can be had with an unplanned pregnancy. In light of that, of course, your story. In fact, I loved that you shared the photo of your wife graduating from med school with your second son, I think it was, strapped in a little snuggly to
her. That's actually from Princeton,
Oh, okay. Princeton. So that was just, that was really cool to see that. But talk to us a little bit about that, about how then, if we're looking at this as a family issue, how do we approach both as a culture, especially as Christians, the the idea of abortion and unplanned pregnancies?
Well, I think the term unplanned pregnancy is kind of fluid.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at CareNet now, we've kind of talked about it in terms of someone who's facing a pregnancy decision,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to even unplanned pregnancy. You use it now because it's kind of popular out there in the narrative. People understand that more so than a pregnancy decision. But it really is, it's sort of a pregnancy decision, because a pregnancy can be planned and then become unplanned. So if it's planned and all of a sudden there's an economic situation or whatever, all of a sudden now it's planned, but the person is still abortion minded. Mm-hmm. And it can be one that's unplanned and the person's not abortion minded. So, mm-hmm. It's a term that we can use because it's one that people understand. But the way we try to think about it is that people are facing a pregnancy decision. You have a decision about what you're going to do with the pregnancy. And the other thing that we like about expanding the narrative by calling it a pregnancy decision is it means that there are more people involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
See, if you're a father and your daughter comes to you and says, I'm pregnant, you as a father are facing what? A pregnancy decision in mm-hmm. terms of how you respond.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
And the other side really wants to narrow this issue, wants to frame it on the woman. And part of that has a lot to do with the fact that it's a movement that's birthed out of the notion of autonomy and enmity. It's an autonomy kind of an argument. So my body, my choice is an autonomous statement because it's not your body and not your choice. And whenever there's autonomy outside of God's design, it's always going to create enmity,
mm-hmm.
which is conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so that movement's about ripping apart the man from the woman,
mm-hmm.
which is destroying this notion around marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then next you rip apart the woman and the baby. So it's all about ripping this apart. Our movement should be around community and unity.
Mm-hmm.
So you have autonomy and enmity compared to community and unity.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by community and unity? Well, we talk about the mother and the father, the husband and wife coming together in the sexual act. That's unity. And then the child, is conceived in that process. And then it's implanted into the woman's womb. Unity. And then the child is born through that process. And then what's the first thing we want to do? We're going to bring that child to the mother to nurse. Unity. And then we invite the father into that process. Community. Because the first community is the family. So you got two very, very different worldviews at play here. One that's built on autonomy and enmity, and another one that's built on unity and community. And I believe that by talking about our issue that way, that's winsome and engaging, because who doesn't want unity and community?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, if you think about the abortion issue, when someone has an abortion, a lot of times they have an abortion because they think that that will position them for unity and community.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I won't be able to have the life that I want. I won't be able to have the guy that I want or the husband. If I have this child, mm-hmm. I won't be able to do that. I won't be able to have unity and community. And that's actually what the issue is. So you're deceived by the evil one to think that an autonomous act will lead to unity and community, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. And so that's part of my view in terms of how we start to talk about this from a more family-centric approach.
Yeah. Well, and I know that you're very passionate about talking about the church's role in this as well. And, talk about community, mentioning that, for example, if you look at the nuts and bolts of where pregnancy medical clinics or pregnancy centers will be involved, it usually is through the birth of the baby or just immediately after. Some are trying to extend that. So then who's going to take this woman beyond? I want to back up a little bit and just get into men and fathers a little bit, because I know mm-hmm. that this is very close to your heart, this subject. Okay.
Sure.
So let's talk about
I am both of those.
The first, that's very true. And so you are an expert on this
yes.
subject. So the question is, though, is, you talked about the opportunity that men have to step up and to enter into this story and, take on marriage, take on fathering, be responsible in this. Is marriage ever a bad idea, though? I'm just thinking of stories where I heard where, guy gets a girl pregnant and he's kind of like, I don't know if I should marry her. I don't know if I want to marry her. Yeah. If I marry her, are we going to be divorced in 6 months? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. What's your take on that practically, how that's played out and what you see as a vision for men in that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the conversation about marriageable, mm-hmm. Is the guy marriageable? But frankly, is the woman marriageable?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact of the matter is we have situations where, the guy may be marriageable and the woman's not, just mm-hmm. because of her worldview. I think that you have to have this conversation by disaggregating it from the institution of marriage versus the individuals that are in the institution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by framing it that way, it helps you. And what I mean by that is this. If what I'm talking about in terms of what the sinners do and we as a culture need to do and Christians specifically need to do is be talking about the institution of marriage mm-hmm. as a building block for culture versus the institution of single motherhood as a building block for culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right, left, liberal, conservative, whatever, if you say as a building block for culture, for most people, I would say that the institution of single motherhood is not where people really want to build stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Let me just bust in and say that you gave the stat that 85% of women having abortions are single. So that's just statistically
are unmarried.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So from my perspective, there's two conversations that you're having with that person. One conversation is about them as an individual in terms of, are they marriageable or not? Do they have the tools, the support, the understanding of what marriage is, that covenant is? And if they don't, then my view is that during that process, I mean, the pregnancy or whatever, could be an opportunity to move them down that path towards marriage so they understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that if you don't have that conversation, particularly if your strategy is to reduce unplanned pregnancies and to reduce abortion, then you're actually setting up a scenario where it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I talk about it in terms of the 18-18 rule, that you'll see her in 18 months with a new guy and you'll see her daughter in 18 years with a new guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not having that discussion, if her mind's not transformed, that relinks motherhood, fatherhood, marriage together,
mm-hmm.
Then what you're actually doing is you're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy for yourself as an individual. Now, if the guy is not marriageable and if she's not marriageable, you still need to be talking about the institution of marriage as a building block for culture.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Even if she doesn't marry that guy, the reality is if she brings this child into the world, what do we want that child to aspire to?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want the child to aspire, if it's a young girl, to aspire to be a single mother like her mother? Is that really what we want? I mean, I talked to lots of single mothers. I grew up in a single mother home. Frankly, other than some folks in Hollywood, I find very few women who say, my hope and my dream is to be a single mother. My hope and my dream for my daughter is to be a single mother. Therefore, every shiftless guy I meet, I introduce him to her in hopes that he'll get her pregnant and leave her.
Right.
I mean, no one wants that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't want that, then you're going to have to talk about the institution of marriage and cast that vision for children so that they can aspire to have something different than what is modeled for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was critical for my situation. I grew up with a single mother. My mom was a teen mom with my older brother, married for a bit and then divorced. But in my mind, the script about marriage and the connection of marriage and fatherhood and motherhood was still there. She didn't denigrate the institution of marriage, even though as an individual within the institution of marriage, she wasn't successful in that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't denigrate that. So when I got Yvette pregnant, my wife pregnant, right? The script was still there that I could aspire to that. And we've been married for 32 years. We broke the cycle in one generation. Both of my sons are married. Neither one of them have children out of wedlock. In one generation,
mm-hmm.
we broke the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why disaggregating individuals and institution is really, really important, because you cast the vision. What my mother did, she cast the vision for this institution. And let me just frame this one other way that maybe helps people get this understanding. Let's say that you're driving a car and you're texting, and as a result, you end up in a ditch, right? And you crash the car. You jump out of the car, right? And someone comes in and says, what happened? And you say, I'm never driving a car again. Cars are awful. They end up in ditches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what were you doing? Well, I was texting. I'm never driving a car again. I mean, the person would say, well, no, actually, it's a user error.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with cars,
because mm-hmm.
a car is an institution in this sense. It has certain principles. If you follow those principles, the car stays on the road. If you don't, then it doesn't. So the institution, the car, is perfectly fine. It's about the individuals. Marriage is the same way. you know, loving each other, loving your kids until death do you part, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a pretty darn good, quote, car institution. It's what we do in that institution that sometimes is damaging to ourselves and damaging to others.
Okay. So obviously, I mean, just as we wrap up here, there's a huge opportunity for the church in this. And, you know, we're talking to largely a population here of Christian single young adults, some of whom have had babies out of wedlock, some who maybe have had abortions, some who are just wondering how in the world can they get their minds around this and what role do they have to play? Mm-hmm. What would you say, where should our audience start, Roland? Whatever scenario we're in, what does this look like for a generation of millennials, say, that we're talking mostly here, who don't even have an experience in their mind where this is not at the forefront of our culture? I mean, this has been their experience since birth, many of them from single parent homes, quite frankly. What do we do with this, both personally and in our role within the church, with what we have? I mean, obviously, we don't have marriages that we can't, like, tell people, hey, here's what my great marriage looks like. How can we be a support? How can we be behind this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you sort of have to, again, to kind of break that apart into different places. I mean, if you're a single mom, one of my things that, you know, I always talk to single moms about, as I said, I grew up with one, is I talk about, you know, what do you want your kids to be? You know, what kind of father do you want your son to be? What kind of mother do you want your daughter to be? What's your hope for them? And just to realize that you're actually in some ways modeling the opposite of what you want. You know, if you want your son to be a good father, he's actually got to see that. And if you don't have it in your home, that means you're going to have to do the same thing that you'd want to do if you want him to be an engineer. You'd find engineers and you point him in that direction and you say, that's what I want you to be. Well, you're going to have to be intentional that way to make sure that he sees guys who are not just good fathers, but also good husbands, because that's the connection, the societal glue that connects them together. I think for other folks that are sort of in the midst of this, I mean, we need to be thinking about, you know, how we're behaving sexually, certainly from the biblical standards, because there are consequences to that type of behavior. And the reality is that if you bring a child into the world, God has a design for that. And kids have a hole in their soul in the shape of their dad. You know, I think he whispers into the wombs of mothers that there is this guy that's supposed to love them like no other. And if he doesn't, he can leave a wound that's not easily healed. Mm. And just because the father is not there doesn't mean that you're not going to have to deal with a fatherhood issue. And the same with the mother's not there, you're not going to deal with the motherhood issue. The peg may be going out of the pegboard, but now you're going to have to deal with the hole. Mm-hmm. So I think that we need to be much more intentional about how we behave sexually. And that's why the biblical standard is so good, because it's designed in a way to protect us and also to protect our children so that they can come into the world consistent with God's design. If you're behaving, you know, consistent with biblical standards and sexual integrity, I think there's a role for each and every one of us to be life support for people who are facing unplanned pregnancies. You know, I talk about us as like sort of first responders, that first person that you tell. If you're a person that's a trusted person and you have a perspective that says that I'm, you know, I have a kind of pro-life or pro-abundant life in terms of the way I talk about a perspective, then you need to live that out. And what that means is you're going to have to think about ways that you can be life support for that person facing an unplanned pregnancy. You can't just say, be well and be fed. You're going to have to think about ways that you can walk alongside that person to support that life decision in a very, very practical way with the things that they need.
Well, that's good stuff. I mean, again, we've been talking here to Roland Warren, president of CareNet, an organization that is doing amazing stuff in this space. But as he says, this is not their issue. They are a parachurch organization. The church needs to step up. We need to start caring for our own. We need to start not only preaching and teaching on this, but modeling it, modeling that care in our own families, in what's going on, and really being honest about this and being loving and grace-filled as well. So thanks for, again, bringing that to the forefront.
Great to be here.
I've been walking through this life, feeling empty on the inside. Just when I thought my hope had died, you were there to bring me back to life. You awake my love, you renew my strength, you restore my heart. You invite me in, you begin my song. You awake my love. I was a cold and heavy heart. I was desperate for a new start. That's when your love came rushing in. And I am never going back again.
Well, hey, everyone. As we finish out the show, we have got Candace Waters here. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing well, as I know you are, too.
Good.
That is good.
I am well. Huh? Yes.
Thank you for being willing to answer another question, because I'm not totally sure how I would answer this one. So I'm going to have to see what you have to say.
Yeah.
So hopefully she's listening, because she says, I am engaged to a man I love and cherish deeply, and I'm attracted to him physically. The issue in our relationship is that my fiance is short and skinny, and it disturbs me a little bit. I find him cute and I'm attracted to him, but I would have preferred him less skinny. I don't know how to handle it. Should I leave a guy just because he's skinnier than average? I don't know how to completely get over it.
Well, I think that she asked the question, should I leave a guy because he's skinnier than average? And I would want to pause and say, look, if you leave this guy, you're not just leaving a guy, you're leaving your fiancé. You've already made a commitment to him to marry him. And so I would just say, honey, you need to slow down here. And either you've rushed into an engagement and you need to really think hard and long about that, or you're letting the enemy totally jerk you around with these crazy thoughts, and you need to do some spiritual warfare, or you're not focusing on what's most important. It sounds like she really likes this guy, and there's something about him that is not 100% what she always thought what she would get. And so maybe it's our materialistic culture that, coupled with our sin nature, lulls us into thinking that we can custom order a fiancé to be exactly the height and exactly the hair color and exactly the eye color and exactly the build that we always dreamed about. And that is not life as we know it. It's not life in a fallen world, but I don't think it would be life in heaven if there were marriage in heaven, because if we were not sinful, we would desire what is eternal and what is lasting and what is the most meaningful thing about a person, and frankly, it's not how much they weigh. This one just kind of hit me hard. Mm-hmm. But my advice would be to pray and ask the Lord to give you his perspective on this man that you are preparing to be committed to and covenanted with for the rest of your life. And ask him to help you treat him and think of him the way you want to be treated, the way you want him to think of you. I suspect there will be points in your life where you gain some unwanted pounds. If you have children, you will gain some weight. And I, unless you are just, you know, unlike every other woman I've ever known, you would be horrified to think that your husband would indulge in thoughts like, man, she's just gotten a little too chunky, you know, thoughts of criticizing your weight. And so it's not a good way to be starting a marriage. It's not a good way to be going into engagement, especially since your role is going to be to support him and respect him and really admire and look up to him as your spiritual head. And, you know, practically speaking, there's a really good chance that he won't always be the number on the scale that you marry him. A lot of guys get married and start loving the cooking their wives do for them and gain some pounds. But you know, he could lose weight. You don't know. You don't know what you're going to get, but none of us do. You could find a guy who looks exactly like what you always wanted, and the day after you get married, he could be in a car accident and never look the same again. Mm-hmm. Or you could leave this guy because he's too thin and find a guy who's exactly what you've always wanted, and on the outside and on the inside, he is empty. You know, he doesn't have character, or he's not very smart, or he doesn't love the Lord. I mean, we don't get to custom order the people in our lives. God is sovereign over who he brings into our lives, and he calls us to think soberly about ourselves, to not think of ourselves more highly than we ought, and to really be for the good of the other person, to the glory of the Lord, and to love him as unto the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, good thoughts. Thank you so much, Candace, for weighing in on that one.
You're welcome. No pun intended.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Whoops. Okay. Well, that is it for this week's show, folks. Do write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. Do subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that already. That's a great way to just get the show every week. And of course, you'll get the culture segment as part of that as well. And do pass along the show to your friends. Let them know what you're hearing and what you think about it. Maybe you can even discuss it with them. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.